On this episode, I spoke with Chelsea Castle, the Senior Director of Brand and Content at Lavender AI, and we talked all things content marketing today, and specifically dove into lessons in marketing that she took from her early career as a journalist, how Chili Piper grew their content marketing engine, and how Lavender is doing content completely differently. So this is a great one for all of you content marketers and founders out there. Let's dive right into it. Let's first off start by giving you a chance to introduce yourself to the audience for people that don't know you. So Chelsea, if you wouldn't mind just giving kind of the bullet points of your marketing career and then what you're focused on right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Blake. Excited to be here. My name is Chelsea Castle. I currently am the Senior Director of Brand and Content at Lavender AI. But historically, you know, I've kind of been all over the place. I have a very diverse background. I'm a journalist by trade, worked in the agency world, kind of cut my teeth in the tech industry by kind of starting out by creating websites for clients, and then went into tech, worked at various tech companies, most notably led content at Chili Piper and at Lavender, kind of leading lots of things across the marketing world. So it's kind of what I'm up to now.
Yeah. And I want to dive into a couple of those experiences. But first, earlier on the journalism side, I wanted to dig in a little bit deeper there and just kind of get your take on how or what journalism skills slash habits that you had in the past have translated over into your marketing. Like, is there anything that you've taken with you that's still an important part of what you do?
Absolutely. I think some of the best marketers that I know are also fellow former journalists. As a journalist, you're really focused on the person in the story typically and storytelling. So I think that has like really served me well in my career as being the foundation for how I think about content marketing, kind of thinking outside of the traditional way of, you know, we have to do X, Y, and Z to check a box and write for a formula or an algorithm and SEO. It really enables me to think about the people that we're writing for. So the audience, the customer, ensuring we're helping them. That kind of storytelling experience has really given me a good background. Lots of skill sets around interviewing. You know, that is like a hard skill for sure. I'm sure you're used to that. You know, I'm sure the more and more you do these, the better you get. So having that interview experience has really helped as well. And kind of given me just like a inquisitive nature too. So I think being a curious marketer is really helpful and kind of serves you well in terms of always be thinking differently and being curious about how you can solve problems differently. So there's probably a handful of other skills, but those are like the top few from journalism that really translates.
Yeah. And especially when you're working in tech or B2B, one thing you'll hear pretty often is like, it's really boring, especially on the content marketing side. You'll see all kinds of boring stuff. The way that you have to sign up for gated content or ungated content or whatever. It's like, there's a lot of boring stuff out there. But you've managed to work at companies that are kind of known for doing content marketing really well. And I don't, that's a surprise because obviously you were attached there and helping to drive non-boring content. So if you look at those experiences across the board, you can do this, you know, one by one if you want, or just look at all of your experiences together, however you want to. I'm just curious, like, what makes content resonate? Well, you're talking about people and that's kind of the core of it, but what else kind of contributes to making content that isn't so boring for these, you know, for tech and B2B companies?
Yeah. Well, and thank you, by the way. Thank you for the kind words. I think it has a lot to do with the team you're around, but also leadership, having that, like getting that buy-in from leadership from the top down of knowing like, okay, here we're going to do things differently, but also here's what different means for us. So I think creating content that is bold or different or not boring, however you want to slice and dice it, really starts at the brand level and understanding, okay, what does different look like for us? What does bold look like for us? Just because your competitor is doing something that's maybe different and innovative and getting attention doesn't mean you should just copy and paste it and do the same thing. It's not going to work for you. It may not work for you. Maybe it will, but most likely it's going to resonate more if you are executing it in a way that is true to your brand values. Starting with some conviction, what do you stand for? What do you not stand for? And really honing that in, I think that is like a miss that I see in B2B these days, kind of like everyone spinning around the hamster wheel, doing the same old things. And then those who want to get off the hamster wheel aren't always sure how to do it. So I think a good way to start with is let's look internally and start with the brand and your ethos and, okay, what is different or zagging? You know, if everyone else is zigging, we zag. What does that look like for you? It's going to be different you know, it was different for Chili Piper. It's different for Lavender. It's going to be different for other brands that you're seeing kind of getting attention these days. It's really kind of have to start internally and how you do that yourself. Another thing that like has worked really well in achieving that like non-boring approach to marketing, both at Lavender and Chili Piper, is kind of similar to what I was saying about like my journalistic roots. Honestly, it's like getting away from just checking a box. I think a lot of marketing is about, okay, we do this, we publish, and we move on. And I think a lot of us now are starting to realize that's not how we consume content. That's not how our audience consumes content. That's not how buyers buy. The journey's different. So kind of getting away from that methodology and thinking about what will actually resonate. A lot of our tactics at Chili Piper, for example, were really rooted in deep customer and prospect research. So where was our audience spending their time? Where are they going when they have a question or a challenge? That's very different for every brand. For us, you know, our core ICP at Lavender are our sellers. When they have a problem, they're not going to Google to ask a question. That might be very different than somebody who is, you know, using Zapier, for example. Actually, it's Zapier. Zapier, like happier. I always mess it up. You know, if I'm looking to like connect two tools, I'm not going to ask a community that I'm in or a friend. I'm going to go to Google, which is why SEO works really well for them. And not necessarily for us. So it's all about like really ensuring that you know your audience, but you have to put in a lot of legwork to do that. Talk to customers every month, not just like listening to gong calls, seeing what resonates, where are they living? There's probably like a whole checklist of things, but those are some kind of like some of the initial thoughts on like ensuring that your content really resonates and you're doing things that are a little different than how you maybe used to do them.
On the subject of content resonance, whatever you want to call it, thinking through you've written for yourself too, and then you've also created for brands. How do you think about the differences there between, all right, I want to create content for me, and you may have the goal of growing your career or going viral for fame or just making money online, whatever your personal goal is, and then there are the goals for the business. How do you view those approaches as different, you know, just in terms of creating the content and actually distributing it?
I love that question because it's coming up a lot more, right? As more people are trying to test the waters and experiment with becoming their own creator or influencer online. I think you have to make a choice. You either say, I'm presenting myself forward as Chelsea at Lavender or just as Chelsea. You can do both, but you have to be thoughtful about the actual execution of that. It's definitely possible to kind of interweave your role and your work into what you're sharing online, but it's also fully possible to like not talk about Lavender and sales emails at all. So I think it kind of starts with that and also your goal and your why. I always suggest individuals start with that as well, because it can be really hard to put yourself out there online every day for a myriad of reasons. You know, if you're putting a lot of thought into a post and it doesn't get a lot of engagement, that can be really disheartening. If something does perform well, you like really love like that dopamine hit that you get when everyone's responding and commenting and hopping in your DMs and be like, hey, I love this. Like, thank you. So it's a roller coaster, I think, of a human experience when you're putting yourself out there. So start with your why, to think about like, why am I doing this? And that'll lead into and help inform like the rest of what you're asking, right? Of like, okay, do I put myself out there as me at my role or not? It also depends on your audience. You know, for me, a lot of times when I post about sales email content, it does not perform as well just because I'm a marketer. So the majority of my audience is marketers. So those are some considerations to kind of keep in mind, right? So like your why, what's your core goal? Do I want to weave my work brand into it? And there's of course advantages, right? Of like, if you're growing your audience, and talking about your brand, then you're elevating your personal brand in connection to your company, and it can kind of like lift the brand as well. So we've definitely seen it work really well to have content creators who work within the company sharing, you know, the content we're creating, the videos we're creating. They can be your biggest and best distribution channels, but it has to be authentic, right? It's not going to work if it's not done authentically in a way that also resonates with that person's audience.
It's interesting because a couple of years ago, when you were at Chili Piper, I think a lot of people that are active on LinkedIn in particular saw a lot of Chili Piper people. That's say that 10 times fast.
Yeah.
creating content on LinkedIn personally and then having it flow through the brand like that. And so then you see this kind of uprise of, oh, Chili Piper's getting bigger. Like, it seems that way. But that's only one content channel. And, you know, I personally didn't even see all of the other stuff that was going into it. So if we just look at, you know, historical, what you were doing there, what were the other content pillars or efforts that you were setting up at Chili Piper that you felt were pretty worthwhile?
Yeah, great question. So one thing that we did is called Centers of Excellence. I think they're calling it Chili Experiments now, but it was centered around this strategy of creating content about what we are actually executing. So what are some of the tests that the CRO team is working on and what are the results of that? And that's like one example. We are writing about like some of the things that our engineering team was doing. After I left, Alina, who was one of the co-founders and co-CEOs, she wrote about her first like 30 days as a CMO, as like acting fractional CMO. So writing internal articles about the work that we were doing proved incredibly successful because we were marketers marketing to marketers, but also all of our internal ICPs were also external ICPs. This can be done for any brand though. You know, if you're, you know, like Jellyfish, you can write about what your engineers are doing as an example. So that was one core pillar that really worked well for us. And we were able to extract a lot of that content and repurpose it. But because we were writing about what we were doing, that not only elevated our brand as a company because people were seeing what we were doing, but it was most importantly helpful for our audience because they were able to kind of see what we were doing, relate to it. So there's like a human element of like being relatable, people learning from what we're doing. And then they're also learning something at the same time that they can take and apply to their life and their work.
Yeah.
So and really cool.
What about at Lavender? Like, how is it different? How are you thinking about content differently than maybe you were at Chili Piper? And what are the tactics that you're really excited about right now?
Oh, yeah. So differently. And I guess it has a lot to do with time. Chili Piper actually was only just a few years ago. But I think in that span of time, this category that is being built by a couple of brands specifically around owned media is like the core, I think, of Lavender. We started all early on with a lot of internal team members, like I mentioned, who were creators, who were our distribution channels. That proved incredibly successful. A lot of the page views that our articles get, upwards of like 8,000 to 10,000 per article per month, it's like mind-blowing. And it's just all about getting eyeballs on it. So distribution first, but then also serving helpful, valuable content. So creating content that's tactical, that is not at all written for SEO, and it's written in a way that we know will directly impact our audience. So that is like one stream of it. And then the owned media piece that I mentioned is really related to Lavenderland, which is our free streaming service hosted on Audience Plus. So creating content that is really value first, creating memorable experiences for individuals when they're seeking content that's helpful, but also entertaining. So kind of weaving all of those things together as like the pillars of our content and then repurposing all of it has been pretty successful as well.
I asked those questions because I love talking about and showing people how varied content actually is. Because I, especially early 2010s, it was like, okay, content marketing is blog posts. HubSpot set the model. Let's do that. And now it's a lot more varied. Like you'll get into, well, is influencer marketing content? A little bit. Is, you know, blogs and podcasts and all this. You've got all these different factions of things you could do. So I love highlighting all the different things that are contained in there. It's so varied now. Shifting gears just a tiny bit. This is more leadership, I guess, or like role specific, but you've done the content side where you're more like a specialist, but you've been a leader for a while as well. And there's a big contrast between those. I'm just curious for maybe a specialist listening to this that's into content, but not quite a leader yet in the company. What are the skills or things that you need to be good at or need to do as a content leader that are very different from the job of a content specialist?
Yeah, those skill sets will definitely serve you well in terms of actually knowing the ins and outs, right? So you'll often encounter as a content leader, so there's a few things. So first, I would say like you're the buffer between leadership and your team. Being a specialist gives you the day-to-day disciplined experience to be able to speak to what you're doing and what your team is doing to leadership, right? So kind of tying all of that together. Oftentimes, who you're reporting into, your CEO or what have you, your CMO, they're not always going to understand SEO. They're not always going to understand your day-to-day. I have not really ever worked for somebody who is like a content marketing, has like a content marketing background. So you have to have the day-to-day experience. It'll serve you well to be able to then translate all of that into leadership. So it's a lot of like managing up, helping them understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. That'll help you get buy-in. So those are some of the, that's probably like the number one top skill of like being able to translate what you're doing in a way to kind of like prove your case to leadership. That's like a big part of it. It's like always getting buy-in. Building trust would be like my second point. And that's just something you kind of learn, I think, by doing. And especially if you've had the opportunity to work with like other great leaders who've done that, you have to kind of build trust with your leadership over time as a content leader to get like some of that autonomy to experiment, to try new things, for them to trust you, to just like have some autonomy and run with whatever it is that you want to do. And then also from like a people leadership standpoint, right? So I've always been a leader in an IC pretty much since college. I've always done both at the same time. Lavender is actually the first time I've just been executing. I'm not leading a team right now other than outside contractors. I'm just able to execute and it's really strange for me. But that experience has enabled me to think about how I manage up, right, in my relationship. So, but kind of going back to my third point is people leadership. So thinking about what kind of, you know, leader you want to be. Being a content leader isn't just about managing up and thinking about who you're reporting into and elevating your work and your team to leadership. It's also about the people that you're leading. So you're not in charge. You're being a leader is about taking care of the people in your charge. So do you want to be a compassionate leader? Do you want to be a disciplined leader? Like, what does that look like for you? I think those are really important questions to ask yourself when you're trying to make that transition from being a specialist to a leader. And just figuring out, yeah, what does that look like for you in practice and day to day? And just thinking about how to support them in their growth.
Last one for you. And then we'll stop. I love to get a peek into like tech stack. I think it's really interesting to see what other companies, what other marketers are using. So let's imagine a scenario where you're only allowed to keep, let's say, three of the marketing tools that you use at Lavender or for yourself personally, and the rest have to go. What are the three most valuable that you couldn't live without?
Oh, that's a fun one. I think that's a very underrated perspective, as most tech companies have bloated tech stacks. First for me would be Asana. I cannot live without Asana. I've tried every project management tool out there, and Asana is just the only one that works for me. So Asana is definitely number one. I guess Webflow would have to count as this. Like, it would have to count, you know, it's like what our website's hosted on. We just launched a brand new website. It's enabled us to have a lot of flexibility and also flex our creative muscles online. So it hosts our CMS, it hosts everything. I also don't think the Lavender brand would be what it is without Lavender Land, which is Audience Plus. So Audience Plus would be my third piece of my can't live without tech stack.
I love it. Unique ones. Usually we get like Google Drive. I'm like, yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah. I like it. All right. Would love to give you a chance here as we wrap up. Just let people know where they can find you, how they can reach out, and what you're kind of thinking about these days. What's important to you?
Yeah. You can find me on LinkedIn and Twitter. My handle is just my name, Chelsea Castle. Love when people reach out, say hello. I've been connecting a lot lately on Zoom with LinkedIn friends, which has been fun. So definitely feel free to say hi. And I've been spending a lot of time lately with job seekers. So I've opened up my calendar on every Friday to right now I'm having like probably like 1 to 3 job seeker conversations. So as somebody who's been laid off before, somebody who's just working for a company that really values that, but especially like me, like I've really enjoyed those conversations. And it's also like mutually beneficial in terms of just like connecting with other humans. So I've been spending a lot of time with job seekers, providing feedback on their interview process, resumes, experiences in general, handling layoffs, presenting yourself a certain way when you're emailing a hiring manager. So if there's any job seekers out there, would love to talk.